You say we don't know. We say we don't know. We say Drek the Zone.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Trek This Out, where we are going to be reviewing Discovery Season 5, Episode 3, Janelle. And we've got a whole big bunch of hosts this week. Six of us, in fact. So we've got Deb.
Hello.
Andrea.
Hello. More hosts than the Trill.
Saki.
Hello.
Legendary old Trek This Out host, John.
Shep. Oh, me. All right.
Definitely old.
Yeah.
And from round the console, Cliff.
I'll do.
Excellent.
The question is, where are we going to find our next clue?
These answers you want might cost you your life.
Seems like something you could have mentioned before.
I have been waiting for you nearly my whole life.
That's it?
What was that?
These canyons are hunting grounds. I simply wish to protect you in all ways that I can.
Take cover!
Oh, the hits just keep on coming.
So, shall we start off with our initial thoughts of the episode?
Just before we start, I noticed just before you started the hosting, you took your shirt off.
Yeah.
Is that like... like slowly we go through, we start taking more clothes off.
100%.
I've got loads of layers, so I'm safe.
It's the Cobra effect, you know. It's sort of like if you unzip your jacket, you become a different person.
So I did that. If I unzip my pants, nobody comes around.
Yeah. If you keep your pants on, nobody wants to come around anyway.
Yeah. I'm liking Captain Rayner behind you in that position there, Cliff. Looks very saucy with his hands on the desk there.
Best thing that happened to Trek, that.
Yes. Anyway, come on, let's not make it a long one for Suki. So, let's start off with our initial thoughts. So, shall we start with top of my screen, Deb?
I enjoyed it. I had to watch it in bits because I'm with my parents at the moment. But I don't know how many points I would give it, but I enjoyed watching it. And I'd be interested to know what other people did. It raises lots of questions, which is what you want, isn't it, in episode 3, is to be thinking, well, that's interesting. I wonder what they'll go through with that. And I think it is still on what I said last week about the theme being about being together and unity. I enjoyed it.
Great stuff. How about you, John? What was your initial thoughts?
I've struggled with Star Trek Discovery for a number of seasons, but I'm being positive with this one. And after a shaky start, because I thought one and two were a little bit, it only started to get going in two, to be honest. But when we get to this one, it started to pick up pace enough. And I'm feeling as if we've got a big old quest that we're going on, which is very Lord of the Rings, and I approve. So we'll see where we go from here.
I was going Monty Python.
Excellent. How about you, Cliff? What did you think?
Well, from the other two, and I had to watch the whole of season 4 in a week just to get on this podcast. That's how dedicated I am.
So we didn't ask you to do that.
Anything after
to do that.
I needed all the story in my head. So after watching all that, this was actually really good. So the first two was okay. There's a lot of like shooting blasts and stuff like that. This one, you can see they started to feed things in of what's obviously going to come through later into the stories. I do think the title of the actual episode should have been called Relationships, because that's what it was really about. It's relationships between the different peoples. But all in all, good.
Great stuff. Andrea?
I think similar to Cliff, because I do like me shooty bang bang Star Trek, and I think like one and two were kind of felt like action set pieces, whereas the three's gone back to that Discovery all about the feels. But I think it was a welcome change of pace, and I think there was still plenty of plot in there, so I did enjoy the episode.
Super. Suki?
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a slow burner, but in the whole there was a lot of interesting points made and I was fairly interested all the way through. I would have preferred a bit more action, but yeah, on the whole, it was all right. Go on, Drew. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree with what you just said. I think it was all right. It was, I think, a bit slow, really. But, you know, I guess we've had two exciting episodes, so now's the time for the difficult third episode to come on. Anyhow, let's move on to deeper faults then. So should we start off with not captain anymore, but number one, Rainer, and he's fighting with the crew, and there was an immediate hand there from Andrea. Go for it.
Right, this is my rant of the week, right? Because it was like, let's go on a leadership and management course, but run by hippies. And I found the whole thing quite difficult. That whole describe yourself in 20 words is the most arsehole interview question in the history of time. If I went to a job interview and they went, describe yourself in 20 words, I'd be like, yeah, fuck off. I don't want this job. Like, I'll go work somewhere else for normal people who ask normal questions.
That's more than 20 words.
Well, exactly. So I'm out of the running there. But I also think, like, it's almost like Tilly kind of like hitting home with a hammer, like you have to be touchy-feely and you have to be everybody's friend. And it's like, no, it doesn't work like that. And the further up the food chain you go in the real world, the less you can do that. So I kind of got where he was coming from, that he doesn't need to be huggy and everyone's shoulder to cry on, and he just needs to do a good job. And he's been a captain, and I can kind of see where he's coming from. So I'm 100% on his side in that argument, because like Tilly's hyper insistence, like, you know, you have to love everybody. It's like, no, you don't. That's not what management looks like. So that's my rant of the week over. I'm on Team Rainer in that one. It's like, yeah, it's okay to be maintain professional distance. That's fine.
Yeah, I love this character. It should have been brought in many seasons ago. You need a more straight-laced person, more professional, rather being over the top, huggy-huggy, around everyone's nicey-nicey with each other, because that doesn't happen in the real world. There's always some twat around, isn't there, and you don't like. But he plays it really well. He's not a bastard. He's doing a professional job he wants to do well. And the fact of the 21 seconds thing, I think that was more for us, but then to show how stupid the writing has been. Like, the first time I got to know that blonde woman went to Voyager was within those 21 seconds when he went, oh, yeah, and she's gone to Voyager and she left me a cat. I first thought that was a bit weird. Or not a cat, a nibble, a wibble, a dibble, or something. A furry thing, yeah. But his character, I hope, I like him dwelling with Burnham, and like they're going to bounce off each other. I think he's a great asset to the show. Should have been brought in ages ago.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that the character is great, but he is an arsehole at the moment. But he's going to be on a journey on that. But it's a bit hypocritical, really, that they make out that, well, Rainer, you're too governed by a personal agenda. He's definitely got an agenda, but they're saying, good captain doesn't get governed by a personal agenda. I mean, what's Burnham been doing for four seasons? She suddenly turned around and telling people not to do what she's done. But we definitely need a character like this to stir things up a bit, because it's got far too huggy. Is that look at the watch because I'm boring you? So,
no, you never bore me, darling. You never bore me, darling. I've not got any messages. I'm just checking, that's all.
But much as I like the handsome and erudite, much as I like the handsome and erudite Saru, I think Rainer's an excellent character, and I think we're really going to like him, and is much needed into the dynamics.
John, ooh. I think you got your hand up. It's all blurry because all your back. What have you got in the background?
It wasn't his hand.
It's a house.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think Rainer, when he came in, I was thinking this is exactly what they need. The ship is too full of people that love each other like brothers and sisters, and all that sort of clammy awfulness.
Yeah,
you need some conflict within the actual core of it, rather than just external aliens and such like. I was quite disappointed at the end when he revealed that he was like, oh, Tilly was right, and he was. I think no, he should stick to his guns a bit more and start to be a little bit more antagonistic to make some genuine drama on the ship. Because what you get on the ship currently is awful.
I feel like there's going to be some parallels drawn to what they did in Picard with sort of Todd Stashwick's character, that kind of, you know, like, I'm just going to say no to you, Renee, and I'm going to have this big arc where everyone falls in love with us. But I also think, like, somebody at some point is going to mention Jellicoe. I've got a whole rant about that. Again, I'm not going to get on relationship management soapbox, but yeah, I feel like I'm seeing those links.
It was fun though. The 20 words thing was fun to watch, particularly, and I can't remember her name. Last time I did this, they gave me chips. Perfect. And Linus, of course. You did see a fair bit, and I think it was supposed to show that Raina could actually assess probably the usefulness and priorities of the crew. But I like him. It needs someone in with a more practical idea of what leadership is, and I'm sure they'll all be huggy at the end, right?
I totally agree. I think we need that hard XO there, don't we? I always think of like the best XO is Colonel Ty from Battlestar Galactica, and I mean he had no friends on board at all, did he?
Yeah, it's a bit like Suki. You know, that's why we have Suki as our CO.
Well, also you've got like Picard. He wasn't a lovey-dovey with his crew.
Exactly.
And he was perfectly acceptable for him to deal with that. And that's the leadership thing as well. It's different strokes for different ships. You know what I mean? So
that's a good one with Picard, because it was only the last very episode he sat down and had a game of cards with them, wasn't it? So he didn't socialise. He didn't have to go to the bar all the time and start mingling.
He didn't have stare dreamily into Riker's eyes and tell him how much he loves him and values him as a friend.
And then hug him. He never saw that.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah. Very touch appealing.
You look at the end of TNG anyway, you saw Picard was the first time he turns up at the poker table was on that last episode. And he was seven years in.
That's what John just said.
Yeah, that was Shex. So you're both wrong. Wow, this is madness.
Oh. Just melded into one.
Generic male host.
Northerners.
Yeah, stop objectifying us, Debs.
So roughly, we're all agreed that Raina is an excellent addition to the Discovery, then. Well, that's good.
Yeah, I should put in that Picard always had a thing with Beverly, otherwise we're going to get into trouble with certain listeners.
Well, he maybe did, but he didn't need to demonstrate that with overt manner.
Exactly. You never saw him grabbing her, and if he did, it was off camera.
Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, that's, you know, probably did it in the toilets that they never show as well.
Yeah, exactly. On that lift.
We need Becker's theory on all this.
I thought Captain, like, Cantankerous Raina and Wholesome Tilly was a really good kind of comedy setup and duo, actually. It's good. You know, it's a bit of light relief. Maybe you could call it.
Do you find that the storyline of Tilly, it feels like they don't know where to put her? Because in the first few episodes, it was like, oh, you're going to be a training woman. And then it's like, oh, you're back with Discovery. And it's like, I don't think they know where to place her very well, even though she's been through such good stories. She seems to just slot moved her about.
I wonder if some of that's to do with the fact that they sort of realised it was the final season, and I imagine there's some kind of rejigging going on, so I wonder if they've kind of
redone the story.
A bit more to do just to repeat when Bimby said plans kind of longer term. And I know Mary Wiseman won't really answer questions on this Starfleet Academy thing and whether or not she's involved in that, so I don't know if that's a go of Mebby's and they've just given her a bit of a swan song in season 5.
Well, they didn't know they were ending the show until, I think, the last few months of her production anyway. So I think they made a decision about bringing Mary Wiseman's character back on board Discovery. Maybe for the light relief, because they haven't got a light relief character on board for the show, because the rest of them are all fairly serious characters, whereas Tilly is quite funny, light, and she brings out the comedy. So they needed somebody like that. But the fact that I don't think they knew that it was ending until quite into the end, towards the end of the production anyway. So they've made a decision to bring her on quite early.
Yeah, I think that as well, that she fits in all right, as far as I can see, because she is that sort of in-between character that doesn't tiptoe around Rayner and would just say, I don't care if you give permission to speak off the record or whatever it is, you know, you're a jerk. I think maybe Rayner needs somebody that he can have those conversations with or those arguments with. And also Mary Wiseman does the comedy brilliantly. I love her character this season.
I just think in contrast to that, I'm not entirely 100% convinced that Tilly is right about him being a jerk. I just don't think she understands him because she's used to the way she's used to it. And yet she has to learn maybe that there are different ways to things.
Yeah. Rayner's sort of right, but he's still an arsehole the way he went around it. Maybe they can both learn from each other.
Hmm.
Well, if that was, I thought that was basically the B plot with Rayner and getting to know his crew. Should we move on to what you might call the C plot, which I think is Saru and Tarina and their whether they do their wedding announcement plans or not.
Is that really a plot? Is that really a plot? Can we count that as a plot?
I thought it was, yeah. It was certainly different from like the A plot of Burnham and the B plot of Rayner and Tilly. I found this quite insipid, actually, this whole little avenue of Saru and Tarina and their wedding invitation business. I can see your hand up, Deb. You enjoyed it, did you?
Well, I think it is all these subplots are to do with togetherness and working together, unity. And I think that's going to be, and that's, you know, I said last week about what was going on, is that all the different sub themes will link to this quest where they're going to find the Holy Hangren, the humanist rock, and the vampire rabbit. No, we did all that last week. Sorry, Andrea, I didn't manage to stay on track. My brain did flit off again. Imagine living with this brain. Just, you know, give me a break.
Yeah, we do feel sorry for your parents sometimes.
When you think about it, the whole story is going towards if they actually find this engineering equipment that created life, then what does that do with the rest of Star Trek? Really, so there's got to be something profound to that, and I think it is about difference coming together. And when you've got the news at the moment, it makes it more powerful. Every one of these sub themes, apart from Adira and Gray, which I think will come round to it, is about people coming together who are different. So this is saying, well, maybe we shouldn't have a personal life, maybe we shouldn't announce this. Because the extremists, the Vulcans and other people will not take you seriously, and it will upset them. And you know, saying, "Well, actually, love's more important than that," and it is about difference, overcoming difference.
Well, the thing there with Trina and Saru, it's also setting up the end of the season as well. Because once this technology is found, who's going to want to be in charge of controlling the president, Vulcan society, Vulcan purists? There could be all sorts of different races all vying for this technology, and this is all going to come into play with Saru being the ambassador for the Federation to be able to, you know, mediate between all these different races to be able to
they have to come together. I don't think it exists, the technology. It's all about people coming together.
I was just going to say that I'm not sure if this is one giant like MacGuffin, and it's just going to be like, oh, it was like the friends you made along the way. Like, I've got a sinking feeling that's what they're going to find. You know, they found like a little TikTok message from like the progenitors in the chase. So I think they're not even going to get that this time. I think it's going to be like, oh, look at all your friends.
Is that analogous to the actual Star Trek Discovery arc overall as well?
Mm.
Yeah, it's a bit of a MacGuffin, but it's about friends you make along the way.
Well, I was thinking, right, and I've had my theories, and as John and Sucky know, I've got some great theories. Yeah. I was thinking, right, it'll ruin it for me if they find this thing, they get it working, and then they bring back Buck's planet, right? I thought if they do that, that'll make me sick. But my theory of what's going to happen is they find it, they understand what consequences could be, and it outweighs the good, and they destroy it. Because that's the only logical thing to something so powerful. But Paul Rayner is going to be losing his life because of it. That's how I see it at the moment. Because apart from them looking for this, and they've got these people looking for it, and that girl just so happened to be related to Buck, that's just a bit too far-fetched, even though it's obviously spaceships flying around.
Just very quickly, before we go to you, Deb, did anyone catch that when they said that the technology allows you to bring back the dead? That's got to be a plot point.
They said it a few times.
Yeah, so they can bring back Lorca.
Very D&D trope is this season so far. We've got a little quest and everything, haven't we?
Yeah.
So long as they bring back Lorca before they destroy it. Whatever it is cannot exist at the end because it's too profound, too changing. You know, either doesn't exist or they have to destroy it. And maybe it is a unified action that does that. But whatever it is, if it does exist, they need to bring back Lorca, please.
So we've moved a little bit away from the Saru and
Tarina.
You remember that when we started talking about Saru? It's not that interesting, is it, this part of the story?
Because you're set into this thing that from the beginning, that's not going to happen, isn't it? Saru's too happy. This is too perfect. It won't happen. He's going to die. They can't get married because of this. And you're expecting the typical story, and every single time they seem to overcome it. And that I think that is good. And I hope that carries on. I really hope that they do have a happy ending.
I feel like that relationship's kind of moved a pace because it feels like 5 minutes ago they were just like bucking up the courage to have a cup of tea together. Like they seem to have, let's get engaged and all the rest of it. That seems to have happened quite a lot and off screen, which I don't kind of mind.
Oh, sorry. So we have to assume they banged already, haven't they?
Well, did you see
I try not to think about that because
think about it.
Those hoofs
down a corridor, and it was like I can't understand the physics of this.
And when he walks like that,
yeah, that's great for. But the thing is, did you actually see the foreplay in this episode? She actually raised the finger to the chin and just took lightly stroked it. There's your foreplay there. You know,
the chin.
I mean, to be fair, that gets my rocks off too. So, yeah, I understand it, don't I? Yeah.
Directly after that bit, my wife goes, "Do you think he's got a willy?" I was like,
maybe that's his willy. She was just manipulating it right there in the corridor.
Oh, it's his butt. It's brazen. Like a bit of rimming on it. Yeah.
Andrea, you best take it on.
Well, I was going to say there is a sort of well-known rumour about tall, skinny blokes, but I'm not going to perpetrate that any further. But they have such a mild little relationship, don't they? They had an argument this week, but they didn't. Like, everything's so bloody reasonable. It's like, it's not a very exciting relationship to sit on the sidelines and observe, is it? Like, I can't imagine them, I can't imagine her hitting them in the face of the frying pan, like Pauline Fowler style at any point. So, you know, it's not very soapy, is it, for a relationship? It's not very gentle and sweet, but they are quite adorable though, and I do like Saru, and I do want him to sort of have a good ending. So I suppose if that's it, it's kind of a bit boring and suburban, but you know, each their own.
Sweet and Saru, the handsome and erudite Saru is Andrea's done a lovely drawing of Saru this week,
yes,
which we have shared on Twitter, and so have a look and like it and make nice comments, and also follow the link to the Discovery. What's the link? What's the hashtag?
Disco fan art,
which is in celebration of the not just this series, but in celebration of the whole series and us bringing us all together, because that's what it did. That's how I met Andrea. And because of the gorgeous, sexy Lorca.
Anyhow, John, did you have a point to make there?
The gorgeous, sexy John.
Yeah, the handsome and erudite, gorgeous, sexy John. I think I think the entire Saru thing is that it's a very conflict averse show. The conflict is generally there'll be somebody betraying somewhere, but generally the conflict is with a very marked bad guy. You kind of have, you know who your baddies are, you know who your goodies, all the goodies love each other and are brilliant. But it's like the conflict, there's need to be conflict within those spheres as well. Otherwise, what you're getting is very much fanfic a little bit, without wanting to be, I'm not denigrating fanfiction, but some of it seems a little bit that way in terms of like, well, I would love it if these two really got on and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I just feel that the Saru Trini thing is very much in emblematic of that situation.
Okay, well, while we're talking about relationships, how about the D plot, which was Adira and Gray breaking up again? Another bit of an episode, I felt.
I don't think they are breaking up, though, are they?
Well, they officially broke up, didn't they? Or but did they not?
They came and held hands at the end. I don't know if that's like a friendship thing or a relationship.
I thought they said we're breaking up.
They just didn't act like it at the end. That's what I'm saying.
But that's discovery, isn't it? Everyone's happy. Like, even on a breakup, they're not bothered.
Yeah. They've not spoken to each other for a long time. So maybe they were slipping the Skype code or something. They just said, did you hear about this thing called Skype and WhatsApp? You know, we can actually carry on talking to each other. And,
or in that case, Zoom or.
Yes.
Yeah, but they were doing that. They were holler calling each other all the time.
Were they?
She said that.
I thought that they said that they haven't spoken to him for ages.
They haven't met in person for ages. They've been doing the long distance relationship thing.
Well, let's move on to the A plot, shall we? The main part of the episode. So that was Captain Burnham and Book going to Trill. Doing the weird Trill ceremony thing. Janelle moving into Dr. Dishy Culber.
When he said he was going down to Trill, number one, if she's captain now, she's put herself down. She's always going out and doing everything. Stop it. You've got a number one
now. Can't be a Mary Sue without being a Mary Sue. That's the thing.
You know what she's done? They've reverted it back to the original Star Trek, where Kirk used to just go out and do everything, and everyone got slammed for that. And then he changed it, and she's put it back. But apart from that, she brought Book, and he had no reason to be there apart from at the end when he used his fort thing. That was it. I couldn't understand why they brought him either, even though he's probably one of the best actors in it. So when they went down, it felt like they didn't have a reason. But the doctor, the guy who plays the doctor, when he did that change and he got took over, superb. I thought, wow, that guy can act. He really did well. I liked his like swagger as he was walking around. I could understand why he was doing it. So I enjoyed that. I just felt the actual fighting bit as well went a bit too long.
I think the criticism for several series is always that it's Burnham. And it was always going to be a show about Burnham, but then they created all these other brilliant characters that we don't see much of. And it's crazy that, you know, the story is always about Burnham. Burnham is risking her life. And now she's appointed a first officer who at the moment is not safe really to take control of the ship if she gets killed, because he's too much of a renegade, much as we think he balances, or I think he'll balance well with Burnham, is that, you know, she is risking her life. I can't remember. She took Book because of knowing Moll, I think. Because in the end,
Moll wasn't part of that, though, was it?
No, but there was this thing, if you take me, I understand what they're like. They didn't know that Moll and Lek were on the planet, but I thought it was like, okay, I'll take you, because he said why he would be useful.
Shoehorn noises coming on.
He would
cue the shoehorn noises as they tried to jam him into the end of the episode.
Yeah, and it is sort of very much them. But about Wilson and Culber, I think he was absolutely brilliant. I was reading about it. It's the way that this character Jamal had been out, you know, not corporeal for a long time, and the mischievous, the naughtiness, everything about the character kind of made sense. But I don't, and there was the thing, immediately unzip the jacket. It was a bit like, I'll put a moustache on to make it clear that I'm another character. He didn't need that. He was absolutely brilliant doing it. But I was really looking forward to an episode with Culber. And the only way they could do it is to make Culber a different character. And that was a bit of a shame, even though I think it was brilliant. It was just a shame that we didn't actually have Culber on the away team being Culber.
I think hats off for finding a way for Wilson Cruz to describe himself as buff. I mean, we all, there's no need to rub it in, Wilson, really, you know, zip your jacket up, love. But it reminded me of the Deep Space Nine episode, Facets, where Dax gets the others to kind of the previous hosts to inhabit the bodies of various cast members. So I felt like it was a bit of a callback to that. But he did do quite a good job of it, I think, and he did kind of, it was believable that he was a completely different character, I think. So I think they did a good job with that. I didn't mind that at all.
I mean, my analogy for that one was Red Dwarf, where Lister's body gets taken over by Rimmer, and he just goes on a right binge eating cream cheese and just gets on a ship and hotfoots it out of there. Screw him. Yeah, that could have happened as well.
Could have happened. Yeah, you were buff.
I did like that performance by Wilson Cruz. The way he actually created that Jinal character, and it's so different from his own Culber character. I'm sure he's fantastic the way he did it. The only thing I just don't like the uniforms. The uniforms are now starting to grate on me in that they're uneven, the cut is uneven, and I'm just thinking, why aren't they just level? I just prefer them to be level. Back and front, Andrew.
You're 1,000 years out of date, Sookie. That's the problem.
Well, this is why I've got the grey beard and everything. You see, I am out of touch, but that's why I can have these sort of opinions about fashion.
In other things I like to see, as sort of survivors of 80s British sci-fi, I'm really glad they went and filmed in Quarry and a cameo.
Yeah, that was very felt that. I felt that too. Yeah.
I like to see some action filmed in a quarry. I always think that's an important part of science fiction, and let's never let that go.
I mean, obviously, I think every science fiction series there's a moment when the budget is low enough that they have a green screen in a quarry and we'll just see what they can do. And I think that's very, very much like that. That was what they'd done here.
The quarry scenes, though, when it started to get dark, did you find it a bit naff? In that it wasn't properly dark. I think they must have filmed it during the day. And I watched it on I watched the episode twice on two different screens.
I mean, you can really tell as well these days.
And both of them, they were just too, it was too dark. The picture was too dark, and it just looked like they've put a filter on it. It just looked a bit naff.
Needed to be able to see books.
Lights flashing up.
I think in terms of theme as well, like the big snarly, like, spoken plasma vomiting scary monsters of the quarry turned out to also be bloody reasonable. Like there's a lot of like bloody reasonableness, isn't there? It's like, oh yeah, we're just protecting our eggs, like just go about your business, it's all right, like we're all friends here. So even the sort of monster of the week, if you like, was a bit kind of like, oh, we're nice guys really, you know, you've just like, you know, you've popped round unannounced and we don't like it. We had our pyjamas on. Like, it's all very mild, isn't it? It's very kind of...
very saccharine, isn't it?
It's like that TOS episode we saw recently, though, wasn't it? Spock would have got it. And then as well, it had to be a mind meld to understand that they were not hostile.
I was going to say, you know when Buck got the dart into his leg?
Yeah,
he recovered remarkably from that. And you think it would be some kind of poison dart, wouldn't you? If these beasts have been there for over 800 years of evolution, with the amount of people coming there, he just gets shot in the leg and it's like, oh, yeah, he's all right now. I thought that was a bit stupid.
I think it kind of, I thought of the animated series episode as well, you know, the one where young Spock runs off into the wilds of Wani, like, and there's creatures waiting there and kind of old Spock has to come and save him. It was a bit like, you know, it was in the vein of Corey episodes. Just happens that one was animated.
I'm glad you said evolution, Cliff, because that's what I was wondering about. How have these things evolved? So they've evolved like cloaking technology, natural cloaking technology.
Yeah.
They fire missiles. They seem to be fairly intelligent. And like they're just letting these things roam around the quarry there. You would have thought they'd put them in a zoo or something, wouldn't you?
Or built a Tesco there. How would you know that thing going to be there for 800 years and just goes, oh, here it is. I'd be there all the time. I can't find my keys half the time. That's like 5 minutes ago.
I mean, you're from Salford. They put Tesco's in a chasm there to keep it safe, don't they?
The thing about it being there 800 years, has it actually been there 800 years? Because he actually had it in his hand, whatever that device was. Right. All he had to do between the period that Colby was taken over and by the time they got to the quarry is just say, look, just send one of the Trill people into there, draw the symbol on a random rock close by where this nest is, and then we'll just send the Starfleet people into there and see if they can perform what they've got to do. To be able to get to this piece. And that's all he has to do. That thing, because that thing wasn't there for 800 years, it was kept somewhere safe within Trill society somewhere else. So they kept an eye on it. It just wasn't there.
I did find it a bit cheesy, the whole, oh, no, it was all a test and I had it all the time. And, oh, yeah. What did he say? He said, oh, you know, we just wanted to see what you would have done to prove that you're worthy. What would he have done if they'd just killed the monsters? They would have said, oh, well, that's the test over now because no one else can do it ever again.
Yeah, because who can have this technology if it exists is far too dangerous. So they have to show it's not only that Starfleet are worthy, but if it can go into the wrong hands, then it can cause so much danger. It can get rid of all life, I guess, effectively. So it's nice in theory. I can understand why the test was there, but it does assume that everybody is worthy and that they won't.
Huh? It's not a great test, is it, really? It's not for something that's meant to be so important.
It shows that they're willing to discover what these creatures were, and they weren't just going to kill them because they were a threat. So it shows a level of wanting to communicate, which again is about togetherness, isn't it? And unity. Not building a Tesco when you can put a Waitrose there.
It's far too middle class for me, that Waitrose. It kind of, the test kind of fits in with like the Naff riddle, like the worst riddles ever. It's like a riddle that came up with Christmas cracker. All the clues in these things, no matter who writes them, are always a bit like, how did they make that leap to find that next clue? It was like the Trill spots. Like, it's always going to be like those tenuous links to the next clue. It's never quite. It's like, oh, it must be that. I mean, like, how did anyone get there? Like, in reality, you're going to be sat around in a room going, what the fuck?
And it'll always be Michael Burnham or Book that gets it right. Maybe Tilly will get one, but no one else gets a look.
There's a load of Deus Ex Machinas in this one, I think, in this show so far.
Cliff?
Forgot what I was going to say now, but because we went round. What I was going to say is, I think the only reason he used his mind meld thing is literally because there was in the dire straits moment to say, we can't beam out of here, right? But between that, there was more than willing to shoot them. Was more than willing to shoot back at them. So the initial response of meeting a creature wasn't the fact that they wanted to communicate. They was more than willing to kill them. So the test is failed straight away. And the only reason he did the mind well was like, oh, we're proper fucked now. Try everything we've got, your head.
Yeah,
but they tried it first.
Yeah, but the thing there, they didn't actually use the weapons. And it was Janal who actually told them to weapon up that as well. So if he was telling them to weapon up, he was already making them
prompting them
prompting them to work out to actually shoot the creature. So
he was prompting them to take an aggressive stance because they knew the creatures would respond aggressively, and therein lies the test.
Book did try and do it first, though. They did try the telepathic thing, but Book said, well, they're just too miffed.
So we had a bit of a info dump when they was actually walking to the quarry, didn't we, about Janelle was saying that they'd hidden it because of the Dominion War. Is a good DS9 callback there. Mm. And but they did want someone to find it. And they said one of the scientists had activated it and died horribly or terribly, he said. Yeah. So it's put my theory and what some of you have mentioned this week, that it's not going to be technology. It sounds like it is actually going to be technology. But it did make me laugh a bit because Janelle said, is everything okay now? And they had that bit where, like, Brooke was saying, yeah, and, like, Burnham was saying, well, ish. I mean, they could have said, yeah, all fine, just give it to us. It wasn't really much of a double-checking by Janelle, was there?
So I've got a bit of a theory, because I feel like we've talked about Stamets, like, being a bit of a lost soul now. We haven't, like, really got a purpose anymore. He's four drives in the bin. But what Stamets seems to be doing is getting old tech to fix. So he's got Fred to fix. He's got Bellick's tricorder to fix. Is Stamets going to have to fix something old? Because I feel like we're really, like, hurtling towards Stamets having to repair something ancient, because that seems to be what they're setting him up to do. He must have a role somewhere. Otherwise, he's just kind of like expensive filler, isn't he? So I'm wondering if they're kind of gearing us up to him having to repair something ye olde.
Yeah. He's trying to find a place, isn't he, some sort of legacy, because he feels that the spore drive was going to be his big contribution, and now he feels that that's taken away, so he is a bit lost. But he's also space dad, remember, and Adira is going to be quite incredible, so maybe his legacy is Adira.
I'm picking up from what Deb just said then, is the fact that being the space dad, I think, yeah, he's searching for something greatness, but actually his greatness is already here. He's already been doing his thing. I don't really like that term of the space dad, because I think, like, it's just category, like, he's saying, oh, there's two gay guys. Now you're the dad of this they, them, which you pronoun. And I just found, like, a little bit odd. Why do you have to denote him as the space dad? Because the entire crew seem to look after each other as a family anyway.
No, there was a bit before they found Adira that they wanted a child, and that they felt there was something missing. So it was kind of set up that Adira would be part of their family.
They didn't have to do the awful stuff with the nappies and stuff, so they got away with murder, haven't they, there?
Yeah.
We hope so, anyway.
The bit where Colbert and Stamets don't seem to know what's going on with Adira, because it's Reno that has to point out that Adira is actually going through something, especially with their split. Their relationship with Gray, it seems to be on the rocks, because they haven't seen Gray for 6 months, and there might be a bit of tension there. But Corbin and Stamets both do seem to notice what's going on. Stamets especially. Corbin, we're not really seeing what the interaction is there with Adira or Gray. I can't see why they haven't noticed. Why don't they talk to their child or not about any problems that they might be going through? But it just seems a bit weird.
Well, you've got the idea that the child won't try not to let the parent know about this shit, really. But also,
that's what I was going to say. Yeah, Suki, you've got children, haven't you? Your children talk to you about all
You don't
all
give
the
a shit about your children, Suki,
I don't give
a,
John knows. I don't give a shit about my kids. I mean, one's in that room, one's in the other room.
You've got no idea what they're going through.
Two have married
lives
and got rid of. So I'm quite happy. I am.
I was just going to say, I would like more Jet Reno. I feel like the screen kind of lights up, like it's just my favourite in a lot of ways, because I just think those brief but welcome appearances kind of elevate an episode. And I know she's got a little bit to do at the end of season four, but I feel like give the woman a storyline, please.
I would second that. I think she's brilliant. Even so much so is, it makes you think, does she improv some of her lines? Because she comes out with some brilliant one-liners, on which, if she does stand-up, doesn't she? I've seen her on a few YouTube things doing comedy in the past. I just think if they expanded her role a lot more, but we're on the last season, and you just feel she's always told you about her missing partner. She's already told about breakup and stuff, but it's never been looked into.
She's very much just wheeled in there to do a cameo and to put her face there. I don't think she does enough lines because I don't think they want to spend the money on having her as a major cast member.
Well, the other thing there as well, she's extremely busy as well because she does, as Cliff says, she does do her stand-ups and she does do shows around the country. So she's always busy. So whenever she has a moment, they will write something for her and bring her into the show. So she isn't going to be a major character, but she'll come in for significant moments within the season to be able to move maybe a story along.
I was just going to say, I feel like there are characters I would have wanted more. Like, I don't want to be mean, but I find Adira really dull. Mm-hmm. They're like,
yeah,
Wesley Crusher. Like, oh, like I'm like the amazing super kid.
She couldn't pull off the same jumpers as Wesley, though, could she? At least we had some sartorial elegance with Wesley Crusher. That's all I can say.
I think Adira has got a good storyline coming. I think this episode was very much the basis. You know, he's setting a lot of seeds for the future because how is Colby going to change after having an 800 plus year old thoughts? Because he remembers that. Adira has, I don't think it's as easy as splitting with Gray. I think they've got a good storyline coming up because they've been featured the way that they have at the moment. To be honest, I want anyone to have a good storyline that isn't Burnham. And I like Michael Burnham. I just want to see some of the other characters getting in. And I certainly, with Colbert, I thought, great, Colbert's on an away mission. And then immediately Colbert gets taken over by someone else, which was brilliant. But it wasn't Colbert, and I wanted to see more of that character. I want to see more of all the characters. But we've got that in Strange New Worlds, haven't we, which is a good counter to it.
Well, you've got three more episodes now for the other three pieces of that little cube thing that they've got to collect, that artifact. So maybe one of them is going to be... But then you've also got episodes which is going to deal with who's going to... get the technology within the Federation, and then you've got to wrap the whole season up.
Do you think it's going to end up with about 1,000 copy and pasted starships on the screen in some mega battle?
I hope so.
Wow.
I hope so that something happens. You have to destroy it, but destroying it will send them back.
Oh God! Actually, that'd be a nightmare for the
continuity.
Yeah, for canon and continuity.
Would that bring Lorca back?
Nothing will bring Lorca back, Debs. Get over it. He's never coming back. Ever.
He is coming back.
He doesn't want to come back even.
He's in Thailand. He come back.
We've still got Prime Lorca. Anyway, he keeps messaging me on Instagram. So,
Lorca.
Yeah, but he only wants an Amazon card off you.
Anyhow. So, talking about the next episode, because you said, you just said, Suki, we've got three bits left. But Michael did say the next clue is in Zengefi space and that they can't go to it immediately because they have to get the politicians or something to be able to agree to allow the Federation in. So I predict maybe, someone may have seen what's on next week, that maybe we won't be getting the third piece next episode. What do we think?
I think we missed a little trick. They keep mentioning, is it the Breen or Bream? And yes. I think they're going to come in as like a dominant antagonistic force to it, of which maybe they have to use this to fight with them. But it's been dropped in so many times now. And then there's loads of rumours online. I'm sure everyone's seen it, that green dude with Moll. Who she reminds me of, that Blade Runner woman, Daryl Anna, dressed up in Blade Runner. Looks like they've done the same hair the same way. But he could be part of the Breen.
Yeah, I've seen that rumour today.
I mean, it's saying the whole thing again comes up. If they've got to get someone who's a bit arsey on side, then it is about, again, coming together, coming to an agreement and working together, which seems to to be the whole point. But we also have the element of what the spoiler was that from last week, which we put at the end, so we'll not talk about now. But certainly there is another element coming in some way, which may be completely irrelevant.
We sort of speculated how Calypso was going to fit in, and that was all how Zora, the computer. Now, if you look at the end credits, you've got the character of the president, Trina. You've got Ray's character. You had who's the other one? There was a third character, but the one that takes first billing in the guest story is Annabella Wallace, and that's the voice of Zora, the computer. So if she's getting first credit, she must. I have a feeling she is going to become a major part in whatever the storyline, and which will tie in then with the short trek Calypso, which was.
Are we still under the impression? I mean, it's been a while since I've done these pods. Are we still under the impression that Calypso is actually going to get tied into all of this?
We are all
speculating. Because I'm not of that position at all. I think it was standalone, and if they do, they're going to do. There'll be more shoehorning noises.
I don't think it's going to fit in now. I think they've just moved far too much on from it, because the discovery in Calypso doesn't even look like the discovery now, does it? It'd have to be de-evolved, apart from anything. But I guess we will find out, won't we?
Maybe it gets twinned.
Maybe. So we've pretty much gone through the episode. Has anyone got any other notes? Did we notice the Sluggo cola? You can't have missed it, really, in the bar at the end. Looks absolutely revolting, didn't it?
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing what was Quark's race? The Ferengi. I don't remember seeing a Ferengi in a while in Discovery, but I'm annoyed that it's a barman. That's like typecasting now, isn't it?
Typecasting. Racist, what?
Yeah. Just because he's got big lobes doesn't mean, you know, he's good at serving rappuccinos or whatever.
So how did Maul get onto that planet?
Oh, yeah.
Get through into the caves, dress up, and she still looked the same. She didn't even bother, like, trying to look like one of them. How could no one have picked her out?
That's the thing, isn't it? If you just put a dressing gown on, then all of a sudden... And all that security, all the tests that they had to go through, and she just put a dressing gown on and then sort of sneaks in. When what did she overhear? Was no one paying attention? Do they not count?
I know.
I don't know what they put on Adira's arm.
It must be a tracking chip or something.
Yeah, probably.
Well, you got like Guardian Z goes, when Burnham just asked, he goes, Trill Security will look after it. And the next thing you see is Maul walking around. So Trill Security is a pile of shite. Yeah. It's just rubbish. He just walks right in.
And why did he always have to be in caves when it comes to the spiritual side?
That's where the Trills live.
In the cave.
I mean, you remember Deep Space Nine.
I know, but that was
basically a toilet in a cave.
Toilet in a cave.
Well, as we're now moved on to toilets in caves, maybe it's time to wrap up our review of the episode.
I have got
something more, Deb? Go for it.
Yeah, I have. It was something that Colby said. Was it Abuela? Vabuela? I don't know who that was. Had religious icons all around her house, and said not everything has to have an answer, which is kind of, you know, on a serious point. I'm a Christian, but I find religion fascinating, and I think that lots have insights, and I don't think sometimes questions are more exciting than answers. And I think this is again why I think the series is going to take us, that they don't find the answer because it's too big. I mean, as well as that, you've got, this is an American series, so they're suddenly going to prove the non-existence of God. It's a big thing, theologically, philosophically, where they're going. And again, being philosophical, religion to me is about understanding our relationship to the planet and each other, which again, this series is, it's about understanding our relationship to each other and that we are bigger and we work better if we work together. I don't want there to be one answer. I think that is too unhelpful, really, and simplistic. And I don't know what other people think. And I'm certainly come from my perspective that I'm a Christian. I don't think I have the answers. I just think religion is beautiful. I think humanism is beautiful because it's about asking questions and discovering and understanding. So that's where I don't know who put their hands up first.
I was just going to say, you've gone into that kind of deep philosophical thought. And I did write down, I wonder if those trill worms make you skinny like a tapeworm. I've never seen a fat trill. You've gone into this deep, consideration of philosophy and religion, and I wondered if those trill worms made you skinny. So
that's probably why they need all the toilets.
There you go.
I had a worm once when I went to India. I came back, but it was a big round one. I had to pull it out.
Yeah. Is this one of the points where we have to tell Debs about detours and stuff like that?
God's sake, don't say where you pulled it out from.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious.
It was Deb's symbiote. It didn't last very long.
And that's why we have the Deb's we have today.
I had four pints of Guinness that got rid of it.
Oh, God. Guinness emetic. Lovely.
Mm. Did anyone else in the comments know?
Well, I was only going to say you don't need to be a Christian to have that sort of understanding in things that you mentioned.
Exactly.
So like you say as well, it's an American series and they're very religious. We know that they're a stupid religious country. Yeah. So, you can understand why they like to drop this sort of thing in order to make it seem as though there could be a God, which is fine. They could be, but to suggest that, that is the sole arbiter of, how things are and change and be is not necessarily the case.
And when we've got a beauty of diversity and thought, why would you want one answer in the end?
I mean, just to satisfy my curiosity, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, just give me an answer. I don't need all this spiritual bullshit. I just need to be told the answer. And yeah, right.
42.
Cool. That would make me happy.
We was meant to be doing a tight podcast this week, and we've now moved on to the existence of God. I hate to say it again, but I really think we need to move on to our lights out of five.
How many lights you see?
There are four lights.
I asked how many lights you see.
So shall we start with, I think we should start with John, maybe. What are your lights out of five for this episode?
I'm going to give it a very optimistic 3.5 lights, because this, I mean, to be honest, the previous episodes were less than 3.5. But I'm sure there was places for it to go. It was fairly decent to me. It was enjoyable.
Great stuff. How about you, Cliff?
I'm going to give it 3 out of 5, simply because, we know you have to slow pace ones. It was very much relationships, but it still moved on. It still moved the story on. And it asked more questions to the answers, so it's 3 out of 5.
Super. And Deb?
Can I do 3.75? Yeah, it's a good start to the next phase, I think. I think it's raised lots of good setups, and I like Tilly. And I like a lot about it, really. And I liked Colbert, even though I was disappointed he wasn't actually Colbert. So, yeah, it's all right.
Andrea, you're a fellow mathematician. Are you going to go 3.3 recurring or something?
I am not a mathematician.
What's your lights out of five?
I was going to say 3.142, but no, I was going to we'll save pie for another day.
Geordie. Proper Geordie response, that one.
Well, I prefer pasty, but based on a great stomach, me. But yeah, I think 3.5. I think it was enjoyable, but it wasn't. So I don't think it'll be a highlight of the series. I hope. I think there's more to come. So I'm kind of slightly better than mid.
Serky?
Well, As I said, I thought it was just an all right sort of episode. So I didn't think it was great, and I didn't think it was rubbish though either. So I'm just going to go 2.9. The whole reason I'm going with these 0.9s and 0.1s and all this is so at the end of the year when we have the award show, I can be on a separate level to everybody else instead of being, there's about five of us all on four points. I'll be on 3.211, whatever it is. Anyway, Drew, what's your rating?
I'm going to join Cliff and go for a 3 on that. I just found like the Saru and Tarina and Adira storylines just a bit plain and boring. So, yeah, it was okay. Not bad. Not bad. So that's interesting. There's no one over a 4 on there. I think that sums up the episode, really.
Yeah, it sums it up.
Yeah, but I think it will be one of those episodes that in a few episodes, we'll go, oh, yeah, but remember in episode 3 when this happened? That's what I'm kind of hoping.
Excellent. Well, now you've heard what we thought of that. Let's find out what you thought of that with our listener feedback.
Listener's feedback.
Can't we have features of the species?
We can do.
We can't because Bob isn't here.
So let's have a look. Oh, yeah, I see it. So we've got Jack McMorrow's first. Anyone want to go for that? Shall I go for it? It's a short one. I know. He's saying he's going to have to.
No, let Cliff do the small one.
I could do a small one.
Well, he's saying he's going to have to skip it.
Yeah, yeah. I
unless you
that.
Want to read that out.
Yeah. He does. Yeah.
Yes.
Go for it, Cliff.
Jack McMorrow. Afraid I'll have to skip this week as I'm right sick and I'm at a family event overseas, so I won't have chance to watch. But I'll do reviews for both for episode 4, and I hope everyone else enjoys. If sick at a family do.
You got to spread the disease around when you're ill, haven't you? It's the best way to get better.
Yeah, family comes first.
Who wants to do Rachel next?
Do you want to do that?
Go for it.
Rachel Schrodinger's librarian says, there were so many things to enjoy about this episode. Handsome and erudite Saru had an exciting first day at the new job, and I'm absolutely in love with how good he is with Trina. Wilson Cruz was also great as both Colbert and Janal. I'm so glad we got to see him feature heavily in an episode this season. I genuinely squealed when Reno called Stamets Space Dad, since this is how I've been referring to both him and Colbert since mid-season 3. My wish for Wartilly was granted this week. She has grown so much as a person since we first met her, and seeing her stand up to Rayner brought a smile to my face. They are really killing it with the final season so far. Another 4 out of 5 stars from me. Thank you, Rachel.
Yay. Shall I do Dave K? The first episode of the season I've more or less enjoyed, but still so slow. Although Amazon still says there are only 5 episodes this season, Wikipedia says there are 10, which explains why they're not rushing the plot. Nevertheless, I could easily chop 10 minutes out of this. The visit to Trill was nice, and there was a neat little story in there. It was great to see Wilson Cruz actually getting something interesting to do for a change. I enjoyed the new commander trying to bring some professionalism to the crew, until his outburst was highly inappropriate. I have no interest in Saru and the president's relationship, and even less in Adira's breakup. But I felt the same about every Star Trek relationship between since Worf and Diana. So that's probably my problem. Janelle refusing to say where they were going had big "I met him on the internet" vibes. Janelle saying he couldn't give the crew all the locations now because they have to stretch this out over a season made me chuckle. A nice episode, but please pick up the pace. 3.1 lights. Thank you, Dave.
Yes, that's Dave from the Doctor Who Show podcast. Now, do check his podcast there because that's really excellent little show.
So we've got Maria, who was our guest host last week, who says, hi, everyone. Janelle was, again, a fun episode. We run through three basic plots. Saru's relationship is always charming, and I'm glad we still get some of Doug Jones in an episode. His relationship is always charming, and I like that how his mistake with his engagement announcement was resolved with very little drama. Raina getting to know the crew was fun, although part of me does think it's a bit late to flesh out the crew. I'm hoping Owo and Detmer's absence in this episode means they get something to do in a later episode. It also gives us a great Tilly moment when she finally snaps. The main plot was almost like a video game where our trill NPC only has the riddle to say to them before they beam down. Good use of existing trill lore, but I did guess that the whole walk to the site and face the monster was a test. Much credit to the actor playing the Doctor for really taking on a distinct character. Finally, we also get Jet Reno back. She vanishes for episodes on end, but it's always fun when she appears. Overall, nothing particularly groundbreaking, but it was well executed, so 3.5 lights from me. Thanks, Marie.
Right.
Great stuff. So we've got Cyber Donald. Do you want to take that, Murray? Or, Suki, or shall I take it?
I'll do this one then.
Okay.
Right. It's right. Hello, it's your favourite follower, Cyber Donald. I am at Mondus Alaga, which is the greatest, and busy looking at my files on the toilet, which are not private, because I said they are not, and President Lumich said so. I thought the episodes were okay, but a bit woke and fake, like criminal Biden. Can you send my fee to my fund for paying my court fines, but don't tell anyone, as I say it's for my campaign fund to be the master of the universe. Did you know I wrote the Bible too? Also, Elon said I can go to the moon to get a graviton to prove the climate hoax because I am great, but I have to drink some disinfectant because of a moon virus. Love, Cyber Donald.
I don't think Cyber Donald watched the episode.
I'm not 100% convinced that's a real person.
I think he's on drugs.
I absolutely think we need to get him to host an episode. Please, well, Cyber Donald, if you're listening.
In character, yeah.
You know, get in contact. You're 100% in.
I've checked. It might be Bob. Sounds like a Bob.
I've got my suspicions that it's Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had Bob vibes. So Bob
being self-known. He was calling it James Way, wasn't he? Which is what he used to do. So, yeah, maybe.
We want Bob on anyway.
So finally, we've got Davey Paul Morgan, and he has got to say, just watched it. So I'm coming to love and respect the older Daniel Craig, I mean the new first officer. Welcome relief to the touchy-feely vibe. Nice callback to DS9 and the use of temporary possession by an old host. I thought Wilson Cruz pulled that off really well. Easy now. The ghostly shielded insects are a bit like devil in the dark. I'm really loving Saru's blossoming relationship with the Vulcan president. I'm still less than fond of Dippy, Trill Boy and Adira's relationship, and I'm relieved that they're just going to be friends. Still loving the treasure hunt storyline. I think it's a great way to move the story arc along. Nice cliffhanger. What was done to Adira? Scores? Last week I would have awarded 3.5 for episode 2, but this week, 4 lights out of 5. As usual, excellent production values and performances, even if I'm not keen on some of the characters. Great stuff, Davey Paul Morgan. Thank you for that feedback.
Okay, so we've also got some audio feedback, and this is from Josh Dybal.
Hi, guys. Hope you're all keeping well. Really pleased to hear that John and Cliff are back again for this episode. Well, here are my quick random thoughts on Series 5, Episode 3 of Discovery. First of all, if I was running that space station, I would be a little bit more insistent that Discovery gets further away before they make that spore jump, but that's just me being overcautious. Really pleased to see that Reno was back this week. I hadn't believed that she was coming back for Series 5, so that was a really pleasant surprise. I thought all the scenes down in the canyons were really good. The creatures were done really well. I loved the barbs that they fired off. They particularly reminded me of bee stings. Yeah, interesting observation that pain doesn't hurt you as much as when you're not expecting it. I also thought red herring. I thought I've never really known where red herring comes from. I had to quickly do some research on that and found out that apparently it comes from about 200 years ago when they used to use very strong smelling herring to divert and distract hounds from chasing a rabbit. Poor old Adira and Grey being on different paths and having to end their relationship, such a sad thing, reminded me of my youngest daughter, who unfortunately had to split with her boyfriend back in September because they were both off to different universities. Such is life. The new mobile transporters we keep seeing all the time, they flip from one place to another. Not particularly good for getting your daily steps, eh? Still don't know actually what this technology is they're looking for, which is a bit frustrating, and there was no mention of it in the chase, and I'm a bit surprised that Jamal seems to know what it is, but fails to give us even a clue as to precisely what's going on. But there we go. I loved the scene when Tilly told off Rayner and told him what a shithead he is. I really liked her. Tilly's good. She says it as it is. That's brilliant. One of the things about Star Trek I like is the way that it sometimes helps you with the little things in life. And ahead of recording this podcast, I just had a little disagreement with my wife about some shelving, which we were putting up in the kitchen. In the end, I abandoned the whole thing and she walked off and did some yoga, and I was feeling a bit glum about things. And Trina very kindly reminded me during the episode that conflict is a natural part of any relationship. And of course it is. Thank you, Trina. A little bit of Vulcan wisdom instantly cheered me up. Apart from that, I think that's about it. Interesting that the bar is called Reds. I don't know why it would be called Reds. I don't know whether that's got any relationship to red shirts. Maybe it has. The ending was very emotional. We're all looking for meaning in our lives. And in the end, the connections we make will lead us there. Well, call me pessimistic, but I'm not so sure about that. But no, all in all, I really, really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was quite good. I'm going to give it 3.5 lights out of 5. And I can't wait for next week. Let's fly.
Cheers for that, Josh.
Okay, so after all that excellent feedback, thank you, everyone. We're now moving on to our red shirt of the week.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt. Oh.
So who wants to kick us off with their vote for red shirt?
It's just Sucky. It's got to be Sucky.
Well, do you want to go ahead then, John? Get the ball rolling.
Well, all I'm saying is, Sucky, when we started out, when you invited me on back on the pod, I expected some sort of Zoom invite to some sort of helpful way of administering getting on the call, and you'd let me down straight away. I was having to host the start of this call. It was ridiculous. You let yourself down. And if it wasn't for Debs, Andrea, and Drew there supporting you, you'd be flat on your ass right now. So I think you are the red shirt. You're my vote.
Well, let's go.
He hijacked the call. It's right there from the beginning. He didn't have to, but he did. Right. Anyway,
wow.
Carry on.
Wow.
Whoa. Shot back. Back.
Spicy.
Well, let's go to our other special host of the week.
Special? Cliff. My mum calls me special.
So do the authorities.
Special needs.
Definitely Sucky. Again, for not sending me a link. I sat in the wrong room for ages. I don't know who else was in that room. It was a bit creepy. I was on my own.
If it was you on your own in the room, it was still a creepy filled room.
Yeah, it was a really creepy room. Yeah, Sucky gets it. And plus, I don't really know the other guys very well. I didn't want to give him a red shirt. I don't want to give it John because it'd kill me in DM.
Yeah, yeah. I've got power.
There's some good excuses there, Cliff. Deb, you're often a fan of Sucky. Do you want to go next?
Yeah, I'm gonna nominate Sucky because John says so.
I mean, that's totally the best way to deal with this. Andrea, are you listening?
And he's perfectly right as well. So we're just struggling to keep carrying Sucky through the episode. So
you know, like backaches with having to carry Sucky around every time.
I'm the one with backache. Telling you now.
Yeah, they're all doing all the work, and you're the one complaining about the pain of it all. Yeah, yes. I know how it works.
Yes.
Andrea, do you want to put the boot in as well to Sucky?
Well, you know, I've got plenty of generic male hosts to choose from, but I feel like I'm just going to get on the bandwagon and just nominate Sookie because I just want to be accepted.
You don't have to. You don't it's have
like,
to.
Discovery, no, we're having a big love-in and you're like not in the love-in. Like, you've been like kicked off the show. So, yeah, I'm going with the Discovery love-in. Everyone agrees with everyone. There will be no conflict here. So I'm going to nominate Sookie.
Yeah, it's with the Federation.
Okay, well, I was definitely not going to go for Sookie because he put so much work in here. But, I mean, I've got to follow the trend as well after them, haven't I? So, yeah, Sookie, you're going to get it from me as well. Do you want to retaliate? Who are you voting for?
Of course, I'm going to have to go to John.
I didn't even get one.
What the hell?
He starts a bandwagon and gets everybody to gang up on me for no reason at all, because he doesn't know how to use technology. He knows exactly each week which button to press to go onto the Zoom call. So does Cliff, because they use the same Zoom room as everybody else each week, every time we do an Around the Console or a D&D, and yet they go and have a go at me over this.
I mean, I just
you got all my fellow co-hosts to have a go at me.
I just want to point out that you getting so upset about the admin of this.
I'm going to edit you out all
just
of this.
Justifies
podcast.
All of our choices right now.
I'm going to put out two podcasts, one with you in and one with you. They're all cut out.
It'll take a week for
you. You don't have the editing skills for that. No, okay. I've heard you edit.
Trust me, I'll do that.
Well, let's draw a line under the voting, shall we? Sookie, this week you are the red shirt of the week. So how are we going to dispatch Sookie then? Andrea, that hand was up very quick.
I think Saru and his girlfriend are going to take him out to the quarry to meet those cloaky plasmas vomiting monsters, and they're all going to just be really, really reasonable with him to death.
Yeah, they're going to have a conversation and leave on, like, good terms. It's going to be terrible. Or they could take him to the toilet in Trill.
Yeah, that's it. Nice. Yeah.
The big boss guy.
You get possessed by that guy. That'd be
exactly. I mean, how disappointed would Janal be if he woke up in Sookie?
He'd be very happy. That's all I can say. Very, very happy.
Look, I've been here 800 years. You could have given me a youngster. It won't be going, oh, yeah, well, this guy worked out. It would be flipping heck. How old?
What's wrong with my back?
Or just go without me. Go without me.
Poor Sookie. Let's wrap up the episode, shall we? You can't give him any more editing to do tonight. Yeah, I think I forgot to introduce everyone, so I'm going to do it right now at the end. So, you have been listening to Trek This Out, and we have been reviewing Discovery, Season 5, Episode 3, Janal. You've been listening to John, Cliff, Deb, Andrea, Sookie, and me, Drew. So, all that remains is for us to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye, bye, bye. Bye. Lighters.
How are we supposed to do this?
A Shantara.
It's a ritual that allows Janal's consciousness to transfer to another body for a limited time.
We are ready to begin.
You know, Dr. Culber hesitantly agrees to this, knowing he's the best person for this Shantara.
Janal!
I see you survived.
Skin of our teeth.
So the Janal experience.
Janal? He was a riot.
Adira's reaction to Janal, seeing something other completely take over the body and mind of their dad, is frightening. For me, on the other hand, it was very fun to see Wilson just absolutely go wild with this.
The three of us had so much fun out there.
I believe you'd call that a red herring. Never understood that. Herrings aren't even red.
What he witnesses is this person who has such appreciation for being back in the world. Creating him was nerve-wracking, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it until we got to the set, to be honest with you.
Shantara has ended. Janal has left you.
I needed them to be as different in outlook and in the way that they carried themselves, because A, it's going to be better for the audience, but B, it needed to be somebody that even after that episode, we still saw Dr. Culber in some way have some element of Janal that stays with him because of the experience that they have.
Hey, yeah. Is that Mrs. Drew? Yeah. Hello, Mrs. Drew.
It's the cat.
Oh, hello, cat. Even better.
You call your cat Mrs. Drew?
I do, yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, so whenever you're ready.
Careful, though, because my mum may come in. She doesn't like bad language.
Well, I'll swear, then.
We're going to watch the film, that Little Letters or something or other.
There's loads of bad language in that. That's the whole point.
I know.
Thank you for listening. And you can find us all on Twitter as a group. You can find us on at TrekThisOutPod. Or you can go to our Facebook page at TrekThisOut. Just Google that. You can find me on Twitter as Sidemount_151.
So you can find me on Twitter as at Vintage1983V if you're into Star Trek shitposting and a lot of other thirst. If you particularly like to follow me Star Trek art, have a look on Instagram for Vin of the Basement.
And I'm just Lufdee, L-U-F-F-D-E-E, on Twitter. But if you are interested in knowing our obsession about Jason Isaacs, you can find me, Kat, and Andrea posting weird stuff about Jason Isaacs. Hashtag Team Basement.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as 23BDI.